Market View on Money FM 89.3.
We're 3 days away from the end of the month and oil markets are back in the red. WTI futures threatening to fall below $10 a barrel, and we're also seeing the sight of Brent crude below $20. Of course, this just capping what's been a memorable and yet tumultuous month for energy markets, where we saw West Texas Intermediate futures fall into negative pricing last week as holders of the expiring May contracts were scrambling to get rid of them a day before those contracts were set to expire. And what does May 1 hold for global energy markets, with OPEC Plus set to cut daily crude oil output by about 9.7 million barrels a day? Will this be enough to provide some stability? Today on Money FM 89.3, I'm joined by Dr. Feridun Fesharaki, who is the chairman of FGE, one of the world's leading consultancy firms for the oil and gas sector. He's here to tell us what he made of the month that was for oil markets. Dr. Fesharaki, thank you so much for joining us today, and I hope you've been safe and in good health during these extended circuit breaker measures. Good afternoon.
Thank you very much, John. I think if you have to be in a lockdown, the best place to be is in Singapore. So in that respect, I'm happy I'm here this time.
Let's talk first, Dr. Fesharaki, about what happened the other week. We saw West Texas Intermediate fall into negative territory, and this caught a lot of casual observers of oil markets off guard, actually. Now, you've been looking at the oil and gas industry for a number of decades now. In your many years in the sector, did you ever recall a time when oil prices fell this dramatically? And what did you make of the fall to close to negative $40 last week?
Well, no, I have not seen oil prices go negative, though gas prices have got negative many times in the U.S. The U.S. situation is rather strange because of the specific pipeline, the storage, the fact that there is so much, for example, oil is produced as associated with gas. And so when oil prices go down, then gas volumes go down. A lot of people just flare gas because they cannot use it, and they're offering it. They have been offering it now for a year at negative prices, as long as you can take them away. But we need to keep in mind that what happens to WTI actually has almost no impact on any of us in Asia, because in Asia we work with Brent and Dubai, and WTI is only a very American thing. It is not a global index. It's only an American index. And in the U.S., basically, they're pushing storage filled. And we are now close to actually a full storage. Something like about 6 weeks or 5 weeks from now, we get tank tops everywhere. And whenever the storage gets full, then these kind of things happen. In the case of the U.S., negative prices happen because of the May contracts, as you said. And some problems may happen also with June contracts. But insofar as Brent or Dubai is concerned, it is not going to be negative prices, because as soon as the prices go below $10, people just stop producing. Mm. So there is no sense in producing if you have to sell it negative. But in the U.S., very peculiar circumstances with storage and the longer held contracts which created this problem.
And in fact, some watchers have actually noted that the big difference is that there are more storage options for Brent and Dubai crude. So based on these dynamics, are you confident then that the Brent crude might not visit negative territory and that WTI might be at higher risk of perhaps doing that again? Or do you think that this is a blip on the radar pretty much when WTI fell to negative?
No, I think you're right. It is possible that for June contracts, we go close to zero, if not going to a negative. But on Brent, I don't think Brent and Dubai, we're not going to go negative. We have to keep in mind that the reduction, OPEC reduction, is only from May 1. So they have been producing a lot of oil. The storage is filling up, as I said, in 6 weeks. And so there will be a lot of forced shut-ins, but not negative prices.
Now, forced shut-ins, the production cuts coming in this May 1st, that's actually this Friday, Dr. Fesharaki. But with all the recent volatility in crude markets and the continued production of oil, at least until just the last couple of days, actually, do you think the oil cuts, which is 9.7 million barrels a day, if I'm not mistaken, will this be enough to stem the oversupply, or do you think that it might be too little too late?
In actual fact, They talk about 9.7 million barrels per day, but actual cuts are a bit less than 7. So the rest of it is misleading propaganda about how much is being cut to try to impact the market. But you can't fool the markets too long. 1 week you can fool the markets and the markets work it out. So the cuts actually are small, and it would have been, even at 9.7, too little too late for the months of April, May, and June. But when we get to July, August, if OPEC compliance continues, as we expect, pretty seriously, and if we are able to reverse the COVID-19 trends by end of June, then we could get the inventories begin to deplete very fast. And so the OPEC agreement works, but not in the first next 3 months, not in the second quarter. It's a third, fourth quarter impact. Then we could see prices going up to $35, $40 by the end of the year. But we're not going to get to the $55, $65 for a long, long time.
We're still speaking to Dr. Feridun Fesharaki, the chairman of FGE here on Money FM 89.3, about the month that was for oil markets. Speaking of these agreements to cut supply, it's not just OPEC, as we know, Dr. Fesharaki. It's a number of other producers that are not part of OPEC. Even the United States has chimed in that they are interested in at least participating. But given how widespread this is, and also the difficult history in OPEC even maintaining their own supply cuts, how difficult is it to really enforce something of this magnitude, having supply cuts across the board this big and across these many producers?
Well, it is very difficult, but the best factor on compliance is fear. And now everybody is fearful that if I don't comply, then my life is going to be very, very tough and my economic situation is going to be very tough. We still think, John, that the prices have some way to go down. Another $5, $7 of prices for Brent, we go down. And, you know, you quoted the price of $20 Brent. That is for the June delivery. But the prompt price of Brent is more like $12. So it's very, very close to go below $10 or to $4 or $5. And when we get to that level, then we get the, not only the OPEC shut-ins, but the involuntary shut-ins around the world would be multi-million barrels per day. And that would bring some kind of a balance. But we haven't hit the bottom yet.
Dr. Fesharaki, I wanted to revisit something. This was during when the price war between Saudi Arabia and Russia actually started and triggered the sudden surge in supply glut. Some actually mused that the price war really could have been meant to target U.S. shale drillers. And now we're seeing news of some of these shale oil producers in the U.S. scrambling to find funding and possibly even talking about shut-ins or maybe in bankruptcies. Do you think this was part of the possible endgame between these two producers? And do you think this was actually in the calculus of the price war and not really directed between Riyadh and Moscow?
Actually, I know for a fact that it wasn't. It was just the news of the breakdown in negotiation between the Saudis and the Russians. They got to the crown prince in Saudi Arabia, and he got really upset. He said, let's teach these people a lesson. So the impact on the shale producers is a side impact, but it was not part of a strategy. And, you know, if you remember the story of when the Saudi journalist was killed in Turkey at the Saudi embassy, Saudi consulate, it tells you that there is not a big strategy, big planning process. Everything is impulsive. And it's impulsive decisions. I mean, if he wanted to assassinate the guy, he would have had many other ways of doing it rather than inviting him to the embassy and then trying to cut him in pieces. So it only tells you that when we think about strategy, there is no strategy. This was all the impulsive move. But the impact on shale producers is serious. I mean, we expect 2 million barrels per day minimum reduction in the U.S. production in 2020 and a lot of bankruptcies. But when you go bankrupt, you don't go out of business. You just get reorganized because the resource is there, infrastructure is there, except that you don't have the money. So somebody else will buy you out and you come back in a year or two with the fury. So actually, you don't put them out of business. You just reorganize them and put them down for a while, but they will emerge stronger later on.
We're still speaking to Dr. Feridun Feshiraki, chairman of FGE here on Money FM 89.3. Dr. Feshiraki, there's been a lot of movement in the markets in the corporate space, the oil and gas sector. I'm sure you noticed last week the big story about Hin Leong Trading here in Singapore with that substantial debt pile and losses from these oil hedges. Earlier this week, there was news of these investment products in China linked to WTI that lost about $1 billion also. What lessons can we learn about crude markets and the risks inherent from these two particular events? And could this happen to even more players in the Asia-Pacific region, either in the oil and gas sector directly or even in the investment space?
Well, let me talk about the Bank of China losses. That's a much less complicated issue. There was an ETF, and this was a link to WTI. I don't know why anybody sitting in China would be investing in WTI in the US. It makes no sense. But they did it, and they ended up with over $1 billion of losses, and their lawsuits are going to follow. But it was just bad management in the Bank of China and the lack of understanding by the investors who just invested anything oil-related. The Hin Leong story is much more complicated story. Hin Leong is a legend in the business himself. Mr. OK Lim, as the CEO, is a legend. And very close connections with the Chinese companies. And I think at the end of the day, the company will be rescued by Sinopec and PetroChina, who will put in the money because they need it. The Chinese need Hin Leong. But the fact that it's a family business, doesn't have the real due diligence of the market or the banks, allowed Hin Leong to do things that none of us knew. Actually, nobody knew what he was doing because it was a very, very secretive organization. But he took risks, which shows that in a big market collapse, there is nobody who is safe. And we all have to be ready and reduce our level of risks. As we've seen, this legendary company going down, I think will reemerge from the ashes, but in a different form.
Do you think that this could happen to other companies in the oil and gas sector, though, Dr. Feshiraki?
I think the big traders like Trafigura, Vitol, Glencore, they're all ready. They don't make this kind of mistakes. They are prepared for this kind of problem, and they are not going to take that kind of risks anymore. So it happens to the localized companies, which become so rich and so powerful, so strong, they think that they are above everything and nothing can really hurt them. And then this crash happens.
All right. And finally, Dr. Feshiraki, can you tell us what are some of the biggest risks, either economic or even geopolitical, that you're watching out for moving forward?
Well, you know, John, it's all about demand.
All right.
The demand. So if we are able to reverse coronavirus trend by the end of second quarter, then we have a future for the oil industry. If we can't, the demand is 30 million barrels per day down in April. So the whole year, minimum demand losses would be 11 million barrels per day. It's going to take us 3 years just to get the demand back to where it was. So it's all to do with what we do with the virus. The rest of it is far less important than the demand issue and the impact of the lockdowns created by the COVID-19.
Dr. Feridun Feshiraki, chairman of FGE, thank you so much for taking some time out of your busy schedule to join us today on Money FM 89.3. And as always, I wish you and your loved ones continued safety and good health in these very troubled times. And we look forward to you joining us on the show again in the near future. Have a great afternoon, sir.
Many thanks.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.
Thank you for your time, sir.